Hello and welcome, fellow awesomeologists to Awesomeology. I'm Sue.
And I'm Ben, and in this episode, we're welcoming another Ben, Ben Nuss, Campus Dean of Mid-State Technical College in Stevens Point, amongst many other things. But welcome, Ben.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Well, we're very excited to have you here. We have so much to talk about, so many questions for you, because you have a lot that goes on in your life. But the very first thing I want to ask you, because I do, it's a little bit of casual online stalking of all of our guests. And I see that your career started in construction. And side note, I'm a little angry that your LinkedIn profile starts in 1995, because you do not look like a person who started a career in 1995, but you started a career in construction. How did that evolve from where you started in 1995, which again, I'm angry about, and to today, to where you are?
Well, my LinkedIn profile shows the earliest age that I could legally begin to start working, which would have been 14. But my construction career actually starts when I was 8. My father was a general contractor, and as a contractor's son, I was enlisted at a very early age. And my early work experience actually entailed a lot of just watching, waiting patiently for lunch, sneaking to the truck and eating my lunch early, and then misidentifying tools. A lot of it was just observing, but still formative years for me to spend an 8-hour day as an 8-year-old is a very unique experience. I spent much of my summers then working in construction. And by the time I was 16, was leading a roofing crew. So it was actually one of my first managerial experiences, but learned a lot doing construction, and has carried with me.
So is this a place that your dad owned? Was he self-employed, or did he work for?
Self-employed. It was it was Nuss Construction. I grew up in just outside of Sioux Falls, South Dakota. So we specialized in a lot of remodeling, a few home builds. And then we also built log homes. And so I grew up in a log home, have some experience building log homes, which are a beautiful and unique type of structure.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I am so glad I asked, because as the son of, as a fellow son of an entrepreneur who also started working probably around the age of 8, where I was independent enough to get from school to my dad's plant. He owned an agribusiness and did a lot of the same things, a lot of observing, a lot of holding the flashlight, a lot of misidentifying tools. It took me about 6 years to learn which one was the Phillips and which one was the flathead. I imagine we share some similar experiences there.
Yeah, but a pro tip for any 8-year-olds out there, bring both. If, when in doubt, just grab every tool that closely resembles what your parent described and just bring them all. You can bring them back. You're not doing anything.
Right.
This is, it's a little disappointing for me, because I did this for free, you guys. I misidentified tools for my father.
So did that.
For free.
It was pretty much free for me as well until, I don't know, maybe I got paid a little bit when I was in high school, but. If my first real job other than working for my dad is any indication of how well my pay was, or how good my pay was, my first job outside of the plant was Target at $6.15 an hour. So
there you go.
I was raking it in back then.
And you let that money go to your head, right?
Oh, for sure. Totally.
Good.
And the red shirts. All right, Ben, tell us more about like how... I mean, that early start, how did the path evolve from there? How'd you get to where you are now?
Yeah. You know, as someone who spent that much time with my father, my first intuition was to get away. And so I went to University of Minnesota, where I actually ended up getting a degree in philosophy and psychology. My early ambitions were to work in law, and ergo the philosophy degree, and but grew a passion for understanding biological psychology. and got a minor in anthropology, really had the opportunity to study whatever I was interested in. When I was in Minneapolis, I had the good fortune to meet my future wife, Camomile, who is from this area. So she grew up in the small town of Amherst, Wisconsin. And living in the city, we're like, knew we wouldn't be able to afford a house right out of college. So we said, let's go buy a fixer-upper. And I said, I know a thing or two about construction. So we bought a little house in Wapaka. And the beauty of it is that there was enough holes through the roof that you could see the squirrels as they lived in there. And I remember even the holes on the inside, I would wake up early in the morning and try to get back to sleep and throw a handful of nails at the squirrels to try to shuttle them away. But so we bought a house and really just only intended to live here for a few years. We're like, let's flip this house and then we will move to our eventual destination. And I think like a lot of folks, we just fell in love with this community. It took us a little longer than we had anticipated to fix up the house. And by that point, we kind of just really evaluated what matters most to us. And it was the opportunities that this community provided and the people that we had grown fond relationships with. And so we decided to stay and have been here now for about 20 years. So live longer in Wisconsin than any other places and really proud to call it home. While we were there, one of the first conversations that I had upon moving back was with my wife's father, Bob Ramlow. And he had been in the solar industry at that point for about 30 years, particularly in solar water heating systems and solar air heating systems. And we were sitting down and he said to me, you know, I've always wanted to write a book on solar water heating. Like, no one's written a book on this in 20 years. There was a big industry in the 70s and all of these businesses, they came and then they went out of business and no one was left but me. And I got to fix all their problems and I have all this knowledge. And I looked at him and I was like, I love books. Let's write one. And so we sat down and I knew nothing about solar water heaters. And we sat down with a tape recorder and he basically just talked and we worked on the outline and we co-wrote a book, Solar Water Heating, A Comprehensive Guide to Solar Water and Space Heating Systems, published in 2006. And that was my introduction to this whole new industry. So while I was working on the house, spend a lot of late nights writing and illustrating this book. And then boom, 25 years old and you publish your first book. And that kind of got me into the solar industry. From that, I ended up working in the field as an installer, as a site assessor. So going to individuals' house, working in technical sales, having that opportunity to teach them about solar, about how it works and where it would go. And then eventually ended up doing some both consulting and design work. So it was a great opportunity to work in this like emerging field and to really kind of be an ambassador for what the potential of solar could do at that time.
So awesome.
Absolutely awesome.
So tell me about, let's fast forward a little bit and then we will come back to the end of your time, if assuming it's ended, in the solar industry and how maybe that got you to mid-state or what the steps are in between. But tell me about like the state of solar today. I mean, I know that like in central Wisconsin, there's some great organizations doing some really cool things around here, both residentially and commercially. In your experience, your observation, and living in the place where some of these companies exist, tell us about what it's like today.
Yeah, what's interesting is when I was working in the field, again, this was 20 years ago, installing and selling solar, a lot of people kept saying, oh, this is a new technology. When really, that was the third wave of solar water heaters. The second wave being in the 70s. Jimmy Carter area, oil embargo, oil crisis through the roof. We started to rely on our own energy independence. But the first wave of solar actually dates back to 1891. The first solar water heater was designed, invented, installed by a man named Clarence Kemp. And he had this really great advertisement that said, the son, like salvation, is free. And they were very simple devices. They were just steel tubes painted black, put inside a wooden box with a piece of glass over the top of it, basically a glorified garden hose stuck out in the sun, and boom, they got water hot. And it represented a modern convenience at the time, because if you wanted hot water, you had to light a fire. And here there's this thing that kind of just did it by itself every day. So we've seen these iterations that have happened, but they have largely been what we call distributed solar. So they go on a house, they go where you use it, you put it on your building. And that's the type of industry that I was working in. And when I stopped working in that industry, if you added up, now we're switching to solar electric, but if you added up every solar electric panel in the state of Wisconsin at that time, it was roughly about 100 megawatts. That number probably means nothing to your listeners, but it's a bunch of solar panels and it's a big number. And then the very first large commercial solar industry, means a solar farm that they put out in a field, was 150 megawatts. In one installation, they basically did 1.5 times of all of the solar. And so what we've seen is rapid growth of solar's contribution to our overall energy supply. And it has really been this both and solution. People continue to put it on your homes. It is still a great financial investment to put it on your house. My house, which I designed and built, is almost entirely solar powered, and that is still a great choice. But utilities are now seeing how great of a choice it is. The sun, like salvation, is free, and we might as well put a whole field of it rather than burn it in anything else. So it has actually been a joy to see how many different industries have adopted solar, but I think it's a great thing for our overall energy mix and for our state.
Yeah. Love it. That's so cool. Well, this episode is not about solar. It's about Bendness, but thanks for digressing, because I'm super interested in it. As you might know, Ben, I drive an EV like you. So I'm always thinking about, ways to just make that more and more efficient. So we might have to grab a beer and talk solar for a little bit longer after.
Yeah, I would love to. Yeah. And it did lead me into my first teaching profession, right? I ended up getting 2 degrees in my undergrad and a minor, mainly because I just never wanted to leave college. And I was like, I could study forever. Turns out I need to go out in the real world. But then there was this opportunity. We had missed the initial posting, but caught a late posting for this position. And it was a solar thermal instructor at Mid-State Technical College. And I was at that point not really aware of Mid-State Technical College, right? I lived in Waupaca, so I wasn't certain of the technical college system and the impact. And it was just an opportunity to teach. And I said, this is a great opportunity. I was 27 at the time, applied for the position. I remember how excited I was, because this really was my dream job. Be able to teach and to be able to teach about something that I'd written a book on and what I was doing on a daily basis. And it really is kind of the standard for what Mid-State does, is we take professionals that are working in the field right now and we put them in front of students in order to teach the most current information about what's happening out there. But I remember my very first class, because this was 2008, I'm 27 years old, baby face. And if you remember 2008 in Wisconsin Rapids, we recently had a mill closure and there was a lot of displacement of mill workers that were being retrained. And so I'm standing there and all but one of my students is older than me. I'm almost the youngest person in the room. But I just remember all of the support that Mid-State had provided me to become a new instructor, to have a great experience. And I remember that class vividly, and remember every class since then. It was such a joy to be an instructor. Loved teaching. And then I was an instructor here at Mid-State for about 12 years, and taught in a variety of different programs. So really started in the renewable thermal program. And as the industry changed, our training programs, again, we're always evolving based on what those industry needs are. So at one point, I was teaching also electrical classes, so teaching classes for plumbers. Obviously, I was teaching all of the carpentry classes. We introduced an HVAC or heating, ventilation, and air conditioning technical diploma and had the opportunity to teach that. That started as a one-year program. It's now a two-year degree. And it really, I got to see firsthand the way that Mid-State can be immediately responsive to changes in industry. And that's really been, I think, a beauty of this institution is that we are changing our programs all the time based on what is the new technology, what do employers need, where are the jobs. This is an interesting thing about Mid-State. So per state statute, so by law, we can only offer programs and degrees and diplomas that lead to employment within our district. So Mid-State Technical College, we've got eight different counties, but our main counties are Wood, Adams, and Portage. So basically all of those. If you're an employer in that area, we want to be able to serve you. But we couldn't introduce a program on, you know, aeronautics or, you know, people always bag on underwater basket weaving. But if there was an employer that said, we need baskets woven underwater, we would create a program. But we won't create a program that doesn't lead to jobs in our district, within kind of our network. We're really beholden to that. But consequently, I always say Mid-State is like a mirror. We are built specifically to reflect the businesses that are around us. And if our businesses say, hey, we need your we need our HVAC program to be 2 years, not 1 year, we make a 2 year program. We need to reflect the training and employers that they need. And it is not just in the programs we offer, but it is into the individual course competencies. They say, we need them to be able to use this tool. We will buy the tool and we will train our students on that tool. So Mid-State, I got to see that firsthand as an instructor, but really, really exciting place to be able to.
Yeah.
It absolutely, what you were saying about Wisconsin Rapids in 2008, Ben, absolutely. So I live in Rapids, born and raised here, and within a couple of miles of the Mid-State campus, as a matter of fact. And I think that there was nothing really at that time that gave people as much hope and continues to give people in Rapids as much hope as Mid-State being here, investing in the community, being a resource for people, you know, because there is so much of our industry, there's so much of our job force that is leaving town to go. And I can say that as a person who works for an employer in Marshfield, and to be able to train people here in Rapids with the intention that they will stay in town and be able to make a life of that. I mean, it's whatever people say about Wisconsin Rapids and the things that have happened with the mill and some of the, you know, the more depressed areas of the city, it's a beautiful place. And we have a lot to offer. And so there.
So it warms my heart to hear you say that, because this is at the core of what Mid-State is as an institution, right? It's our mission to transform lives through the power of teaching and learning. And that is at the center of everything we do. Our students are at the center of every single decision we make it's actually a little strange, because you're not going to believe me, but we'll be sitting in a meeting and we're like, should we do option A or option B? And then eventually, without fail, someone will go, well, what has a greater impact on the student? And we pick that one time and time again. And we know, like, we take that responsibility of our communities as being a driving force in revitalization, growth. And I'm sorry, I don't remember the stat, and I really should, because I'm now a dean. But it's something like 90% of our students get employed within our district. It may be 85. It's something like that. It's a big number. Whatever it is, it's a big number. And they tend to stay here. And part of that is because of the connections that we build between them while they're still training with local employers, right? Local employers are in our classrooms, in our advisory committee meetings. They are there, and they're just part of the fabric of what we do.
So tell us a bit about the day of a campus dean. I'm sure not too many are similar, but what's the typical day to day?
Yeah. So to get to this point, about 5 years ago, almost to the day, I took a new position at the college. And there was an opportunity as the Stevens Point campus dean. So Mid-State Technical College has four different campus locations: Wisconsin Rapids, Stevens Point, Marshfield, and Adams. And then we have a few centers like our Simulation Center and our Meta Center. But each of these locations has a campus dean. And this position opened up. And had you asked me 6 years ago, I would have told you I'm going to retire as a faculty. Like, I just loved it that much. But this position opened up, and the role of the campus dean is kind of twofold, right? So one is to kind of facilitate the operations of the building, right? So you are just making sure that the doors open at the right time, and that, you know, the lights turn on and all of those things, and all of the services that are there for our students to be successful happen. I don't directly oversee them. I just facilitate them. But the other is to ensure that the campus is connected to the community. And so we in organizations have positions that are involved in community development. And that's really what the campus dean does for each of these locations. And I think it's the only position, because Stevens Point is my heart, is my community. It's the place I love to be. I love to spend my time. I love to be downtown. And I think it's the only thing that would pull me away from teaching. And people ask, like, do you miss teaching? And I'm like, heck yes, I miss teaching. Teaching is an incredible profession. You should all come and be instructors for us, or come and talk to our students. You will be alive every second. And so now I'm in this role as a campus dean. And that's really what we do on a day-to-day basis. But frankly, every single day is a little bit different. And I started this role, it was officially on February 15th, 2020. And again, the role of the campus dean is to be out in the community. We oftentimes say, be the face of the campus and be out there, I don't know, talking on podcasts and, you know, being involved in committees and Rotary Club and the business council, and go to ribbon cuttings, be present and representing Mid-State to make sure that we have a seat at every table, and that we are representing our students, and we're representing our training programs, and we are there with arms open seeking partnerships. And ultimately, that's what I do on a day-to-day basis, is look for ways to connect our institution to the community. Now, if any of you remember 2020 and what was happening in the spring of 2020, don't even talk about it. It's an important part of this story, because, you know, I take on this role expecting to be there, to be present, right? To be at business after hours and holding a Manhattan next to the mayor, right? That's what you're expecting to be doing. And then middle of March, we close our doors, right? COVID hits. And we as an institution, I think, had to be very nimble for our students, because again, we're training nurses, we're training welders, we're training essential workers, and we actually had been gearing up for online learning, and so we were able to shift very quickly. I was still teaching some HVAC courses at the time, and we needed technicians to keep our air conditioning running even throughout the pandemic, and so we really needed to mobilize quickly. But it was eerie to be the only person in this building, because we didn't have any students here. And so there was times where it was just myself and a custodian. And that was it. And that is not how I dreamed up this job. But it did force us to do some different things. Ben, you had asked earlier. One of the things I did was actually to start a podcast at that time, because, you know, the goal was to get to know the community members. And I was, you know, positionally had a seat at the table, but you all join a Zoom meeting and everyone's squares appear and then all the squares disappear. And how do you build connection? How do you, right, really grow and learn about the people in your community? So I said, well, let's start a podcast. And so the executive director at the time of the Portage County Business Council and myself started a podcast called Profile Central Wisconsin, where it's basically the how it's made of our community. So we wanted to learn the origin stories of our local businesses about how did you start? So we talked to one of the first ones was to talk to Rusty Mitch about how Portesi Pizza started. And he got to tell about his parents and how they moved here. And so I love to hear those origin stories and to build those connections. So actually, podcasting was one of the first things that we ended up doing to learn more.
Love it. Love it all. Sue, we have digressed so much.
Yeah.
From our original.
We got to recenter, baby. Plan. We got to get back.
But like so many great stories, and you know, you're right, Ben, about how like the pandemic, you know, yeah, it's something maybe we all blacked out on some level, but it is such an important part of so many stories, you know, especially folks that like yourself who took on something new just before it, or you know, businesses that were in you know, a key part of transition. I don't know how many times I've heard like, yep, and then I did this thing in February of 2020 or January of 2020, you know, not knowing what was about to smack them in the face, you know. Meanwhile, like, you know, and yeah, you know, unfortunately that did a lot of harm to a lot of people and businesses and things, but there were also a lot of folks that did some really cool things because of it, you know, because they didn't have a choice. And I think it is important to share those stories, the good and the bad, you know, even though we all want to forget about it. Okay, shifting gears a bit. Here comes a heavy question. You ready? We have gotten into the habit of asking all of our guests this big question because we're writing a book about purpose. So speaking about writing books and co-authoring books, Sue and I are working on one together. So the big heavy question is, what would you say is your purpose?
Wow. I thought that you were actually going to throw me a softball and not actually come out with like the biggest purpose. Like, right. What more of an existential question than, hey, why do you exist?
You have a degree in philosophy. Come on.
Yeah. If anyone can answer this, it's you, Ben. Come on.
You know, I can speak to Mid-State's purpose and I can speak to my own purpose. But, you know, I live a life, I think, in pursuit of joy and in pursuit of really building a robust and resilient community. And I think that occurs when we both work on ourselves, but work on the connections that we see with others. So when I sit down in this dean's chair, my purpose is very simple, and it is one of service. And it is one of recognizing the mission of our institution is serving students to really be the best version of themselves and to help them to reach their career goals. And so putting students first in everything we do, that's a real easy purpose as a campus dean. But then this other purpose of really having the greatest community impact that we possibly can. And that's a clear purpose, I think, for us. And that's by growing as many connections as we possibly can. So we've got these kind of like two purposes, but they're all really about having the greatest impact. And interesting thing about, you know, Mid-State, we came back from the pandemic stronger, and we have seen growth in the number of students that we serve every single year. And this was at a period when a lot of institutions were seeing declines. Right? We got hit with the pandemic like everybody, but the next year we rebounded and have seen growth in the number of students that we've served every single year. And in fact, 2 years ago, we were the top growing technical college in terms of the number of students that we serve. Last year, we were number two. We are up again this year and we'll be near the top. We are seeing just a tremendous amount of growth. And, you know, our goal, our president, Dr. Shelley Mondyke, kind of like put a target out there that we have now exceeded. And that was, we want to serve on an annual basis, one out of every 20 community members that we have here. And we've beat that goal. So you look around, if you're in a room of 20 people, one of them has taken a class at Mid-State this year. And that, like, for me, that's really a key part of our purpose, is to have that impact.
Yeah. Yeah. That's super impactful and an awesome measurement to be able to come back to and shoot for. As a fellow technical college super fan, a graduate myself, Western Tech for graphic design, it just feels so logical to me, like of course, who's going to come out of the pandemic stronger than a technical school? Like, so much of the model is based on getting people ready for the thing they need. I don't know if I want to say as quickly as possible, but quickly, right? You know, I mean, there's so much to be learned on the job, that first job or whatever. And I've heard the story 100 times from people that whatever level of college they go to, 2-year, 4-year associates, bachelor's, anything like that, they learn so much in those first 6 months-ish, whatever, of working. But I do think that a superpower of the technical school system is a similar kind of learning while you're getting your associates or whatever it might be. Because you're learning, like you said earlier in the podcast, you're learning from people that are in it, doing it, or, you know, just recently did it, you know, and they're teaching things that are happening right now, you know, in the industry. And I think that's just one of the most powerful things that a technical school does. And of course, they're going to adapt well to online learning and things like that, because adapting and being nimble is just a huge part of the model.
Yeah. And we've had to really reflect on how we've changed since then, and ask ourselves, have we changed too much? And always recalibrating and bringing back to our center. And I'll give you an example of this. So about 2 years ago, I took on an additional position at the college. So in addition for being our Stevens Point Downtown Campus Dean, I'm now also one of the co-deans of the School of Business and Information Technology. So I now oversee the programs of business management, leadership development, human resources, and early childhood education, in addition to a myriad of technical diplomas and certificates that fall underneath them. And it's been incredibly challenging and rewarding. But one of the things that we saw is that students were electing really to only take online courses in that. And we have to say, okay, well, the online courses, they're really fantastic, but are our students really prepared for our local workforce? What else do they need? And how else can they be connected with our community? And this came up in our advisory committee meetings, right? We meet twice a year with local business professionals, and they say, students are missing a couple of these things. This is what we're seeing from your graduates. And so we take that very seriously. And so we really took 3 different approaches. One, we changed our curriculum. And so in our business program, we actually introduced a suite of new classes, one of them called business networking. And it is an in-person one-day course that we run like a conference. Students show up, we give them name tags, we give them swag, and we basically have an agenda for the day, and we bring in a bunch of business professionals. And then we have a social that takes place afterwards. We're like, this, students need this. They can't just have online learning. There's a class on business communities that just met a couple of weeks ago, where we brought in like all of the local chambers to come and meet, and the local Human Resources Association to get them connected. You know, we all know the adage, it's not what you know, it's who you know. And so we've taken getting people to know each other very seriously. We also implemented, the second thing we did is we changed what we call our co-curricular activities. So what do students do outside of class? And so we have something called professional points or pro points. And so every course that students now take in the business program, they have to do 2 social activities that are business related outside of class. And that, I mean, how often are you, Sue and Ben, doing this? You are doing things outside of your work. You don't just come to your office, sit down, punch in, punch out. You do, you know, things like podcasts or networking or engage in the business community. And so we viewed that as an essential competency. So now we're assessing it and giving them credit. And then the final thing that we did is we realized that our cluster of business programs don't have a home. If you're a welding student, you know just where to go. You go where the sparks are flying. If you're a nursing student, you go to the simulation center, you go to one of our classrooms, you know just where you're going to go. But if you're a business student, where's your home? And so a little over a year ago on the Stevens Point campus, we built something called the LEAD Center. And LEAD is an acronym for Lead, Engage, Aspire, and Develop. And it really is the kind of home base for our business programs connecting to the business community. And I say this often, but our job and the purpose of the LEAD Center is not to take the hand of the business and the hand of the student and to class them together, but to create a fertile ground where those connections become inevitable. And then they get to foster and make their own connections. And so that's what the LEAD Center is about. The L for LEAD is for our academic program. So we host classes there. The E is for Engage. So we have a bunch of events and experiences. We have business after hours. We have, this is a good one. So next month, we're hosting something called First Pitch. And so most schools have a pitch contest, and students get very anxious about a pitch contest. They're like, I have to give a 10-minute presentation in front of a table of sharks. That's daunting. And so the first pitch, students get 1 minute to present one slide on one idea for a chance to win $100. Okay, so it's not a lot of money. The idea is low stakes. And right. It's a collaboration between Mid-State and UWSP and the Small Business Development Center. So we have Pointer students and we have Cougar students, Mid-State Cougar students that are there. And they all get 1 minute. And the winners are actually crowdsourced. So you're all welcome to come. It's on March 4th on the LEAD Center. I don't know when this comes out, but if it comes out before then, come and join us at 5 p.m. Everyone that shows it up gets 5 poker chips. And then after everything's done, students all give their pitches. We have a social and we have a networking opportunity. And you walk around and you could give all 5 to one person or you could give 1 to 5 different students. But whoever has the most poker chips at the end and can't re-gift. Basically wins $100. And there are 5 lucky winners that are there. But the idea with this is that it is that first stage pitch contest. The best quote I had, I was talking to a student afterwards, and I was like, well, what'd you think? And they're like, oh, it's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. And I was like, oh, yeah. I asked her, if this was a like traditional 5-minute pitch contest, would you have done this? And she's like, oh, heck no. But now, and I asked her, now that you've done this, would you do it? She's like, oh, heck yes. So we go from oh, heck no to oh, heck yes in 1 minute. So it's a great experience that we can offer in the LEAD Center. Real quickly, the A is for Aspire. So these are our K-12 partners, our next generation of leaders. So we hold a lot of our K-12 outreach events. The local high school hosted a leadership conference there. We hosted a business entrepreneurial conference there for area high school students. But really, we want them to feel at home there as well. And then the D is for develop. We now have a conference center on the Stevens Point downtown campus that we can host about 150 people. Our most recent conference was a nonprofit community forum. We had about 100 nonprofit members and leaders come to kind of share resources. And so hosting conferences and all sorts of professional development, it's a great new addition to our downtown campus.
Wow, that's so much. It's so much, Ben. I'm still dwelling on the networking and thinking, like, really literally thinking, I wish I had access to all of this stuff. A full day seminar on networking. If I had had that when I was 25 years old, I had that when I was 50. Ben,
welcome to join us anytime. You're going to get an invite for the next one.
I might just have to, but so much, so proactive. That's what I think is great about it. Not sitting back and hoping good things will happen or wondering, you know, I think, that nimble, future focused, moving, you know, quickly and trying things, just inspiration.
Yeah. Well, Ben, before we segue into our closing segment, anything else that you want folks to know about how to connect to you, how to connect to Midstate, anything that you want to throw out there for now?
I like that Sue shared how nimble we are. And I want to, if I can, if I have time, to just give two more examples of this, right? We are an open access institution, and we want everyone to feel welcome here at Midstate. And that means any abilities. And two examples of how we're doing that. I remember when I applied to college, I was like, okay, here's my list of colleges. I'm going to complete an application, and then I'm going to send in my $35, $50, and then I'm going to wait by the mailbox to see if I get accepted. We understand that that actually poses a significant barrier for some students, right? And everyone deserves a college education. And so we piloted this for a few schools last year, a couple of years ago, where we started a direct admissions program, where we basically went to the high school and said, hey, every graduating senior, you have just been accepted to Midstate. You don't even need to fill out an application. You just let us know what program, and we will help you get into that program and get you into the right classes. You have been accepted, and you belong here. It was so successful in the early years in increasing that transition rate that basically we sent a letter last year to every graduating senior in our district, 22 high schools. Everyone received a letter that says, you have been accepted to college. First generation students, low income students, we're seeing this breakdown, equity barriers, and folks that previously said, hey, my family didn't go to college, college isn't for me, seeing that they belong here. Another thing that we did is we looked at populations that we weren't serving. And one of those was our population of adults with intellectual disabilities. And so we had this really great conversation with our local ODC, our Opportunity Development Center, and said, how do we serve your population? And they said, well, you need to build some classes that serve our needs. And so 2 years ago, we started a program called Adaptive Career Awareness that is specifically for these groups. We invite them in, and our faculty get to lead sessions and invite them into our space and say, you know, you maybe didn't think that college was for you. You're now a college student and you belong here as well. So we've had it for 2 years. We hosted graduation, and anyone that was at that graduation says it was one of the most impactful things. And so what we've learned is how much we grow when we actively reach out to our community and invite them into this space.
Yeah. Two awesome examples of accessibility, inclusivity, which, you know, are just more important today, maybe more important than ever. So thanks for sharing those. That's
yeah.
Awesome. Okay. Well, speaking of, sorry.
It is awesome.
Yeah. Speaking of awesome, we're going to transition to our closing segment, Something Awesome, where we share recommendations, cool things we've read, heard, experienced, done. And in true form, I will kick us off and I'll try and keep it quick. Because I could probably geek out on old buildings and historic districts and things like that for some time now. I'm a proud member of my local Main Street community board that does a lot of great things to advocate for and sustain historic districts and historic buildings and all of that. But I'm going to share an article about how some unused train stations across the country are being revitalized to housing, restaurants, community centers, all kinds of really cool things. And a lot of the examples in the article are from bigger communities, Denver and places like that. But we know that there's also cool stuff happening right here. I mean, actually, we're not in the office today, but right across the street from our office building, right across the alley from our office building, is the old Marshfield Depot. That's now a teppanyaki restaurant, has been for a long time. So a cool reuse of a building like that. And while the article focuses on train stations and depots and things like that, you know, I think any building that gets kind of a new life through revitalization and investment and development is a good thing for communities. You know, a lot of these buildings that were built in the 1800s and stuff were meant to last for hundreds of years. And unfortunately, sometimes they just get neglected and razed and torn down. And with a little bit of heart, a little bit of love, and sometimes a lot of bit of money, some really cool things can happen with these old buildings. And there's, using Marshfield as an example again, there's the old Thorogood shoe factory that's going to be turned into something. That's all yet to be determined as developers start to make their pitches and stuff. But I think any time that we can look around our community and see that hidden gem, that building that looks like it just needs a little bit of elbow grease, and like I said, sometimes some money. There's so many great resources and people out there that want to see those things live and kind of have a rebirth. And I think it's really tough to find a person that doesn't see a place like that and appreciate the new that can come with something that's really, really old. So some cool examples in the article, cool examples in both of our, all of our communities, Rapids, Point, Marshfield, and all over the world. But yeah, I'll leave it there. You'll have to check out the pictures, some cool stuff.
Ben, do you mind if I share a story of one particular building that's being transformed into something awesome? So didn't get to this, but I also happen to be the president of Create Portage County, which is formerly the Arts Alliance. It's our local arts and creativity organization. And for years, we've been here downtown, but we've been in the process of transforming the chapel of the Sisters of St. Joseph of the Third Order of St. Francis convent site. So the convent has been renovated into housing, a lot of it senior housing. But they say, what do we do with this chapel? And so we will be turning into that to a hub of creativity for central Wisconsin. Construction is still underway. We're nearing completion, but very soon we'll be able to welcome people in. And it's going to have things like a podcasting studio. It's going to have a maker space. There's co-working spaces that will take place there. And then also, of course, performance spaces. So people will be able to have events and perform in that chapel. So really excited to be able to activate that. And as you mentioned, it takes a lot of care and a lot of thoughtfulness and some money. And so we are still engaged in that capital campaign right now.
Yeah, we've been close followers of the progress there. We'll have to share a link out to that too, because it's an amazing project for sure. Yeah. Well, that was something awesome, but did you bring any other awesomeness today?
A book read. Anyone that knows me will say, like, it's hard to get through a conversation without a book read. I would recommend Adam Grant's newest book, Hidden Potential, The Science of Achieving Greater Things. And in particular, there's a section on there about the importance of scaffolding and processing what we do, right? Scaffolding is what we build around ourselves to reach greater heights. And sometimes we don't know necessarily what that scaffolding looks like. And he tells a story of a recent study people did where they had them watch scary movies. And so you ever watch a scary movie and still think about it the next day?
For sure.
For sure, right? What happens is you get these thoughts and it takes a while to kind of process them. So they did this experiment and they had an A group and a B group. And in the control group, you watch scary movies and then they just ask them afterwards, are you still having those scary thoughts, right? And they are pervasive and they persist for a certain period of time. And then they have an experimental group, second group, watch the exact same scary movies, but they have them play Tetris. You've all played Tetris, right? You're just rearranging shapes. And they haven't played Tetris. And those that played Tetris, just rearranging shapes, had scary thoughts for a shorter period of time, and they were less impactful on your life. And so the point is that we don't always know where the help comes from. We don't know what the processing looks like. But the very act of taking an intentional step towards doing some processing of some form greatly helps us in challenging moments. And I think that that's an important message, as we all have kind of challenges in our life, whether they're national or local or with ourselves or with our families, processing helps. helps and you don't know what form it takes.
That is really interesting. Number one, I use Tetris to help me process most of college.
Get back to it, Sue.
Yeah.
And number two, my husband and I were just talking. He said he saw they were doing a remake of Final Destination. And he said, why would they do that? And I said, because we have not gotten over it. We have not healed from Final Destination.
Yeah.
So now I know how I need to do that. I need to spend more time with Tetris to get through Final Destination.
Speaking of not getting over it, I don't know if it's the first one or if it was the second or third, whatever, but the scene where there's the log truck, if you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. Every log truck ever, I will.
Ooh, that's the scene, Ben.
Stay back. Yeah.
I'm going to go play some Tetris as soon as we wrap up.
Good choice. That is
core,
awesome.
Core fear unlocked. Well, my...
All right, so you're up.
I'm here. I'm ready for it. My recommendation is... It's a video series, and you can... there is a lot to it. It's called Soft White Underbelly. And it was created by Mark Leda. Mark is a photographer and videographer. And I'm going to share the link to the YouTube channel, and there's a short little explanation. So I don't want to misquote what Mark says about the project, but he was in marketing for a long time. And what he says is that means that he spent a big part of his career in industries that hurt people, that made the world worse. And he started focusing on stories from Skid Row and reflecting on how that reflects on our culture, reflecting on how the things that we are all doing in the world are, you know, really having ramifications for these people. He has all different topics that he's covered and does, and has many, many, many different video interviews. Some of these people are unhoused, some are struggling with addiction. But he covers topics like religion and poverty, and just so thoughtfully in these interviews. And he says in his introduction to the channel that his purpose behind it is not to fix the lives of these individual people, but by bringing them to light and helping us all understand the impact we have on each other, just to fix the world from this point on and start to think about how we can make things better. So I did a deep dive over the weekend while I was sick. Spent a lot of time watching Mark's videos. Very, really, really fascinating. Soft White Underbelly is what it's called. So definitely recommend it.
Awesome. Googling now.
Well, you don't have to Google, because I'm going to share this link, Ben.
Nice.
along with other Ben N's recommendations and your link as well. Those will all be with our podcast. And you can check those out on our website. That brings us to the end. Ben, thank you so much for being here with us. What a delightful conversation. And I hope you choose to come back, talk to us. There's so much more we need to cover, my friend.
Yeah.
I would love to. This has really been a pleasure.
Excellent.
Awesome. Thanks again, Ben, for being here. And I probably should have kicked the show off with this. Thanks, Sue, for sticking it out. Sue's been sick a little bit lately. She just got her voice back a couple days ago. Sue, you did great.
Thank you.
If I wouldn't have mentioned it, maybe people wouldn't have even known.
But I wouldn't have known.
Thanks for pushing through. Thanks again, Ben, for being here. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Be awesome, and we'll see you next time.
The Awesomeology Podcast is a production of Exclamation Services. Thanks to Nick Mulliver for sound production and Kylie Ganther for our cover artwork.
Executive producers are me, Ben Bauer, and my friend, Suzanne Campbell.